Hello everyone, this is Poetic Desires, and this is episode number 22 of Daddy's Good Girl. It is Sunday, March 15th. As a disclaimer, this podcast is for adults only, so if you are under the age of 18, please visit scarletteen.com. I am happy to say that I can give you this podcast, unfortunately not in its normal form because I'm having technical issues, but a good friend of mine said content is content, so just talk to the people. So that's what I'm doing today. And I'm happy to say this will be the first podcast where I have people with me. I am in the car currently with my two groupie travel buddies, IP Cookie Monster and Evan. Do you guys want to say hello?
Hi, hello.
Everyone. And we have just finished up our weekend in Carolina. We went to the Carolina Grew. It was so much fun, and since we are stuck in the car for an hour right now, I figured why not record a podcast talking about our Grew and the upcoming Grews that we're about to go to. So, Cookie, what is one awesome memory that you have had, that you have made this weekend from the Carolina Grew?
So I actually managed to accumulate quite a number of them, which was fun in a very short period of time. But I would say that the best time that I had, other than just talking to people, which is always the thing that I enjoy the most at Grews, is that it's a perpetual weekend of thoughtful conversations. But I guess sort of the most personally significant for me was that I got to test run a class that I've wanted to teach for quite some time on being an awesome suspension rope bottom. And I think that there are not nearly enough classes to teach people how to be rope bottoms, and that there's not nearly as much information as there ought to be about the way that rope bottoming is in fact a skill. And so I was sitting around one night at happy hour with a bunch of folks who had never been suspended before, and they knew that I'd done a lot of it. And people were talking about suspensions, and the topic came up, and they were saying, like, sort of what they didn't know, essentially. And so the conversation moved in that direction, and I started talking about, like, well, how could I teach this in such a way that someone would really learn from this, and trying to design a class that would be geared towards people who had never been suspended before, and also people who had been suspended and were very experienced rope bottoms, but who had arrived at the point where they were trying to be able to evaluate people who were not experienced riggers. So basically, when you get to the point where you are so experienced as a rope bottom that chances are high that you're going to get tied up by people who are less experienced as rope tops than you are as a rope bottom, and trying to negotiate that dynamic. And it turns out that most of the issues for both of those things are kind of the same. And so I observed that all, in fact, of the classes that I have seen on rope bottoming were done by people in long-term rope relationships.
Yeah, that's so not the same experience as the rest of us.
Really not. And so I wanted to design a class that was basically specifically geared towards how to do rope pickup play and how to negotiate that and get a satisfactory scene out of it and do it safely. And so rather than getting my long-term rope partner to do the demo topic for me for that class, I was very diligent to pick someone who had never tied me up before.
Which oh, really?
Was Evan, who is the other person here. So he can talk about the other side of that class.
So, Evan, what was it like for you?
It was good. I mean, it was a little, there was like that kind of feeling out, figuring out exactly what we were both respectively wanting to kind of put into it and how to go back and forth, but I think it worked out pretty well. People seemed to, like, you know, get something positive out of it.
People came up to me a lot telling me that it was incredibly informative. I think the biggest challenge for me teaching it was to be able to do an effective demonstration where I was still, like, really carefully analyzing all of the things that I was doing with my body as he was tying me up and as I was suspended. And someone in the audience had commented that it was, like, really impressive to watch me be able to talk while I was suspended, and I just laughed and said that they hadn't seen my blowjobs class. But actually, yeah. I was parsing the experience more later with Evan and saying how, for me, a lot of the pleasure in rope in the first place is what I call badass bottoming, and that's not a term that I invented. But that basically it's the idea that you're doing something really challenging, and that the big part of the satisfaction is, like, doing something that's really challenging, like running a marathon or whatever.
Yep.
And that there was a lot of satisfaction for me in not spacing, like, that became a challenge in and of itself.
Yes, I must be articulate, even as this amazing thing is happening to me.
Exactly. And, you know, I watched you get fisted. tell someone how to do it, which is, I think, far more impressive, but...
level, like, degrees.
Degrees. I am very doubtful of my ability to teach a class of infisting and be the bottom on that. But it was a really interesting challenge for myself to be able to try to parse all of that. And people seem to really get a lot out of it. And so, yeah, I'm hoping to get to do that again in other events.
Well, yes, I did not get to attend your class as I was teaching a class at the same time. But I found your class, I kept hearing giggling from it, so I thought that was a really good sign. So, good job. So, Evan, what is one really awesome moment that you had during this brew?
See, I think I really enjoyed the fishbowl, like some of the discussions from that.
Yeah, I think they were... You should probably explain what that means, because I'm sure people listening, if they're...
Okay,
I didn't know what it was going in.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. So I've done a bunch of different fish bowls. So the basic idea is you bring a group of people together and you make them divide themselves into top, bottom, and switch. And funny enough, in this car, we have a person in the top, person in the bottom, a person in the switch group. Didn't even think about that. So then each group thinks of two questions for the other two groups. And then each individual group comes together in the middle of the area and they answer the questions from the other groups. And this area is called the fishbowl. And the big rule is that the other groups have to listen to the answers. They can't interact with the group that is answering. And the whole point is that the group that is answering is having a conversation among themselves and that the people who are listening are learning from the answers instead of interjecting their opinions into it. So it's like, no, you just get to ask the question and see what happens. So I find it to be really interesting.
No tapping on the fishbowl.
Yes. So what did you like so much about this particular fishbowl?
I just thought there were some interesting conversations. I'm actually having a hard time remembering some of the specifics.
So the question, if you don't mind me interjecting, the question that I really loved the answer that your group gave was the question from my group, which is, what's the moment that you love best about a scene? Yeah. And that was, I'm sorry, but those answers got me they were making me wet as you were talking about them.
And Evan's answer went down in the Grunomicon, which is the book where we record all the cool things that are said at the group.
The conversational Stratnell book, yes.
Yeah, my original, like, halfway joking, halfway not answer to what's the best part of a scene for me is when I get the email 2 days later to say that they still think that, yeah, that they still enjoyed the scene.
Yeah.
Because up until then, everything can still go sideways.
Yeah. And frankly, that email can be spank bank in and of itself. But that's just my thing.
Yeah, true. What were some of the other answers from that? There was...
You were asked, why would you... have you ever, like, or why would you experience something that you've done to other people, and why wouldn't you experience stuff that you haven't done to other people?
Well, I mean, there was a question that was specifically phrased horribly that was like, why won't tops ever
experience
the things that they do?
Yeah.
And I think most of us that were in the top group were like, actually, we do that, or have at varying levels, or, you know, for different reasons. But there was also a discussion about how... I think I was trying to put the idea out there that, like, while you can see what the direct physical impact of something feels like, and I think it is important to do that just for your own sort of knowledge, you can never inherently understand how someone else is going to process that.
Exactly.
So it's a very different experience.
Yes.
So you have to take both of those into account.
The question that I had put forth from the switch group was towards the bottoms, asking them if they had issues with bottoming for someone that they had seen bottom, basically.
Yes! Oh my gosh! So as a member of the group who was answering that question, I found the other answers from the people in my group so frustrating! Because, like, okay, so I'm biased, because for me, it's not a problem. For me, I am able to hold multiple different, like, thoughts in my head at the same time. Like, this person over there is, like, bottoming for a scene, and they're crying, and they're getting beat up, and that's hot. And then that same person who is crying and getting beat up is then able to come back and make that happen to me. like, that's not a problem for me, but I suspect it's because I am not in a, like, super serious, you were my dom and I have given my life to you, like, type situation. Because other people were saying stuff like, no, I can't see my dom, who is my partner, like, do that because it messes with their brain.
But they would be fine with it for pickup play, but not for a long-term relationship.
Exactly, and I'm like, the double standard there was just so frustrating.
And I think a lot of the things that that kind of came out of the discussions that seemed interesting to me seemed to revolve around sort of a central pivotal point of people having really complicated interactions with you know, like, the way that people often conflate, like, top and dominant or bottom and submissive.
Yes.
Like, I mean, people were talking about, like seeing their dominant bottoming in a scene and therefore feeling, like, I think there were people who were bothered by the idea of their dominant being submissive. But then what they were talking about was seeing them bottoming in a scene, which is not...
Yeah, like, which is not the same thing.
No.
Which I find hilarious, because one of the questions that the bottoms got was, is there a difference between submission and bottoming? And we went on a whole rant about how it is completely different, and yet they gave that answer. I don't get it.
I mean, I think there's a lot of sort of cultural problems we have where we're not clearly distinguishing the two and separating them out in their own separate...
Well, it's not like they're neat. I mean, that's part of the problem. They're not very neatly divided a lot of the time, so it makes it harder for people to be able to separate those things. I know it's, like, intellectually I understand the difference, but in terms of my own experience, it's right. So blurry that it's really hard for me to separate out. Like, I have a lot of trouble separating those things out for myself, so...
Okay, I mean, I know personally, I feel like I have a pretty clear delineation of a, like, I am doing this thing to you versus I have control or authority or any other kind of, like, power exchangey kind of thing going on. But, I mean, I understand that it's complicated, or that it can be, you know, mushy and not clearly defined.
Totally. I mean, I think especially for switches, I think a lot of times... switches especially tend to play in that mushy zone where, like, and I have regular conversations even with, you know, like, long-term partners of, so, do you think that's just more topping, or is that really doming? Am I really doming you? And we're not, like, really caring, right? But it's just sort of like an intellectual discussion of, is this doming? It seems like doming. I think it's doming.
I think I just have a problem with doming as a verb. Because most of the people who use doming as a verb are, like, new and don't understand the difference between topping someone and, you know, being dominant or being dominant in a relationship or, like, having some kind of, you know, power exchange activity going on.
So, this sort of transitions to the entire conversation that we had at dinner afterwards are you still a dom if you don't have a submissive, and, like, are you still whatever if you don't have whatever? So, yeah.
Right. I mean, for me, like the idea of, like, I can imagine someone doming in that, like in the course of the scene, I'm going to tell you what to do and you're going to do it within the confines of our negotiations and limits and given that there's a safe word. But I feel like that's very different than just topping someone where, like, I am going to do this activity to you, and, like there's not an inherent power element to that. I mean, obviously there can be, and they often overlap in different sort of, you know, coinciding scales and whatnot, but I don't feel like there's an inherent thing there. But, like, when people say, like, oh, I'm doming you during the spanking scene, like, no, you're fucking spanking, like, in that.
See, to me, really, all that matters is, to me, it's like a total functional definition. Like, well, if they're in subspace, I must be doming them, unless I don't feel like I am for some reason. Like, that's pretty much where it usually comes down to for me. Which is totally not about, like, a power exchange thing or anything.
Right, it's about like, physiological, like, reaction.
Yeah,
which,
it's a space thing.
To me, that doesn't, I don't know, for me, that doesn't really have anything to do with dominant or submissive. That's just a physical reaction.
I feel like it's about whether or not, at least for any period of time, like, I have given up my control, or the other person has given me their control, and it's not necessarily about a long-term relationship, but it's not about, like, this long-standing dynamic.
Right.
It's, okay, you get to come because I said so.
Right.
And that, to me, is what doming is.
No, you get to come because I said so definitely sounds dominant. Like, me spanking you and then you get all loopy in subspace, like, that doesn't... that doesn't inherently seem like anything to do with dominance.
I mean, it's fuzzy to me. Like, at some point, if you spank me in just the right way, then I'll usually get loopy enough that I start being like, no, I'll do what you say. Like, I love being beaten into submission. So it's like it's a really fine line for me. Like, one of my favorite ways to get into subspace is to be beaten into submission. And I don't start out there, right? Like, I don't start off saying, yes, you can have control of me. But I start off by saying, well, just beat the crap out of me, and then we'll see where it goes.
Which I think is a great, like, philosophy in life, kind of.
Right? And so if you beat beat the crap out of me, and you get the glazed look on my face, and I'm just like, yes, 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 of course I'll do what you say, then, like, to me, then, therefore, whether or not, regardless of the power exchange that started the thing, like, as long as both people have consented to the subsequent arrangement, like, subspace has happened. So, because subspace has happened, unless the other person is objecting to being in Tom space, like, I feel like that, to me, is a form of dominance. I will keep verbing this, dammit.
So, since we're talking so much about DS, I would like to talk only for a little bit about the session that you had that I had to walk away from.
Sorry.
No. It was the whole law of 2 feet, me taking care of myself thing.
No, I needed to walk away from that one too, but I felt like
it seemed like it wasn't going well, the little bit of it that I saw.
Yeah.
So, Cookie, why don't you start off, like, talking about this session?
So, this has been going... something that's been kicking around in my head for a long time, and I'm planning to write a lengthy blog post on this, and I have a blog, slutphd.com.
After talking about this, if people want to send comments to you and possibly give you feedback that was better than the session that we're about to talk about, that would be super helpful.
That would be super helpful. So I'm planning to write a lengthy blog post about the idea of dominant submission or dominant switch or submissive relationships that are, you know, very kinky, but not grounded in the idea of what we usually talk about as like a 24/7 type power exchange relationship. Because I feel like in the BDSM subculture, we tend to hold those relationships up as the ideal type of relationship. And usually when you go to events, most of the classes that you will see on kinky relationships are about things like how to be a good dominant, how to be a good service submissive, like how to have and navigate these tricky relationships. All of the twoo stuff. And while I interviewed a ton of people who claimed to be in those relationships, I think the majority of the people that I interviewed who were partnered were in at least one relationship that they talked about in 24/7 terms. Now, not necessarily with a primary, but some relationship like that. That there's actually still a substantial number of people who aren't. And there's me and a lot of people like my partners who've been experimenting with a really wide range of things that are not that. And trying to find something that looks like a very kinky relationship that is not based around that ideal, or that says, hey, you don't have to be in a 24/7 power relationship to have a dominant. Like,
yeah,
that's not necessary. So if that's not necessary, then what does that look like? And we just don't talk about that much within the BDSM subculture. I think a lot of people in kinky relationships outside the subculture do that all the time. But people within the subculture don't talk about those relationships very much. And part of the reason that I started getting on that as a thing was actually because I forced myself to read 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
Which I don't recommend.
There are a couple of sex scenes in there that are okay.
There's a couple of sex scenes in there that are okay. And the truth of the matter is, I think that there's far more truth in that book about a lot of people than people in the kink scene want to admit. And the real reason that people in the BDSM subculture hate that book so much is because they know people who are like those people and they wish they didn't. And so one of the conflicts in the book that's not really articulated as such, but I think is really a driving force behind what narrative there is that there's a guy who has learned a particular definition of what it means to be a dominant. He thinks that he has to be in a 24/7 relationship in order to be a happy true dominant. And there's a woman who really enjoys being submissive to him in the bedroom. And she has no desire to be submissive to him anywhere else. Bedroom and his, you know, Red Room of Pain, as she calls it.
Oh, God, I hate the name for that, by the way. Reading that, I cringe every time that phrase came up.
And to me, a big part of the conflict between them is really just about the fact that he wants this thing, and this is how he understands what kinky relationship means, or that he thinks he wants this thing, because he thinks this is what he needs in order to be her dominant. Even though he's actually clearly happy about her being the way she is, like, he enjoys the fact that she isn't submissive to him, but he keeps wanting her to be submissive because he thinks that's what he actually wants,
yeah.
Which is a dynamic that I've seen a lot, actually, between people, and I kind of actually had something similar going on myself at one point.
A lot of people who do not know what they want or think that they're supposed to be doing a certain,
it's the thing,
like, ideal or expectation.
To, right, yeah. And so I was like, I want to make sure that we understand that you can be a dominant. You can have a happy DS relationship where you don't have to be submissive outside of the bedroom, and to try to think more about what those relationships should look like. So that was the class that I was super excited about coming to.
And all of those were great ideas.
I was taking notes. Yes. I had everything down. And then all the people who showed up, which was not many,
yeah.
were like basically in 24/7 relationships
yeah.
and had nothing to really contribute in terms of, yeah, I have all this experience of doing this thing that is not the thing that you're...
Did they even understand?
No.
No, like, that was the problem.
They didn't understand the question.
They didn't understand the question at all. And it, like, eventually just sort of devolved into this argument about the difference between master, slave, and dominant submissive.
Oh, well, that's a whole different...
Which is one of my least favorite arguments in the
yeah.
scene. Like, super annoying argument.
Well, because most of the people who make that argument are this is the real thing.
And yeah, like, there was one of them there.
That's so...
So, yeah, I really wanted to just walk away from the conversation at the point where it became clear to me that it just wasn't going to be the conversation that I wanted to have, but I felt sort of obliged to stay.
I mean, Law of Two Feet does apply to presenters at groups.
It does. It does.
It's not easy, but...
It's not easy, but I should have just left. It would have been a better use of my time.
Yeah.
But fortunately, because groups are amazing, I mentioned at dinner that this hadn't worked out, and then at dinner with a whole bunch of, like, the cool kids, as Poetics amusingly phrased it on Twitter.
Yes.
We actually basically had exactly the conversation that I had been wanting to have in this group.
You had a larger group of people with a wide variety of experiences
yes.
and a clear track record of much more introspection.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. And so I got to have my workshop over dinner with a great group of people. And that
Although
was,
those poor waiters and people sitting around.
Oh, God, yes.
Like, I felt a little bad. Not, like, a lot bad.
Not a lot bad, but just a little bad.
A little awkward.
Well, I mean, we were still in such, like, the crew headspace and the happiness. It's like, oh, yes, why wouldn't we just be talking freely and openly about how kinky and awesome
yada, and yada, yada, kinky slave blowjob sodomy.
Yes, like, yada, yada, yada. Oh, yeah, totally. I'm totally into rape, but it's like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Like, but when you're raping your slave, it's important. there are children yes. in this restaurant.
Oh, there were? I didn't realize there were kids there.
There were...
I saw older white people, but...
I mostly saw older white people, too.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But it was great getting to have the conversation over dinner, so...
Yeah.
You know, I definitely...
And the food there was amazing.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Not if you were vegetarian.
Okay, the vegetarian food wasn't so great, but the
steak,
like...
The steak, though.
Oh, God, the steak was so
fuck
good.
The steak. And the desserts were pretty good.
The desserts... I was amazed by the desserts, yes. but...
And actually, technically, I liked their cheese plate.
It was fine.
Yeah.
The scallops were incredible.
Oh, man. So my flat... Okay, this is supposed to be a kinky podcast. I'm starting to talk about steak. Okay, so...
It was steak and blowjob day yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Really?
And actually, I kind of fulfilled both of those yesterday.
Yeah,
you should have reminded me of that while I was tying you up.
You should.
Oh, God. Yes, yes, yes. Can we totally talk about your, like, reward / aftercare that evening? Because that was awesome to watch.
Okay, so basically... what happened was Evan texted me earlier in the week, and he was like, so do you want to play this weekend? I said, sure. And I thought about it for a second. I was like, so I really need a rope top I need a demo top for my class. So how about you come be my demo top, and then I will reward you with a scene later. And he was like, okay. And then somehow it goes from there to, like, him going, oh, hey, is there anything that you'd like me to bring? And I said, well, I haven't gotten to play with chains in forever, and I have a really serious chain fetish. I was like, but it's really specific, which it is, like, hilariously. It's not that I just like chains, although I do, but mostly I specifically like twisted link chain that's, like, a certain texture.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's the stuff that they usually make leashes out of in the pet store. Which is not coincidental. I'm a big fan of leash play from both sides.
Okay.
But in a very specific context. But anyway, so I was like, well, you know, I've got to play with chains forever. And you're like, so are this going in you or on you? And I was like, yes. I like stains everywhere. I was like,
touché.
And he's like, well, how about I like attach it to the Enjoy 11 and we'll pretend it's like an anchor or something. I was like, I have no idea what you're imagining here, but that sounds hilarious. Which was not ultimately what we ended up doing.
I think originally I was talking about using one of the Enjoy butt plugs and attaching chain to it and to using it as a tail.
Yes.
But, we would have had to get a separate too. But yeah, what you guys ended up doing was hot.
What we ended up doing was awesome. So we only had 3 pieces of chain, the ones that I brought. But it turned
out
I
made good use of them.
You made good use of them.
It worked out well.
We started off with like basically a chain Futamomo on both of my legs. And like, I kept getting them to choke me with it because I'm on spring break, so it doesn't matter if I have bruises on my neck.
Like specifically chain-shaped bruises.
Which sounds so hot, but when I looked in the mirror, I don't think I had any this morning.
Try harder next time.
Well, so the highlight of that, I would say, was he managed to hog tie me eventually in chain, but like choking like one side, and like there's like a chest harness in both my legs, and then fucked me with an Enjoy 11. Which was very intense.
That's a lot of dick.
Please, one of you, describe what an Enjoy 11 looks like for people who are not in front of a computer right now and can't just Google a picture of it.
Imagine 2 pounds of finely crafted surgical stainless steel that's polished and shaped just so and has like a huge fucking knobbly head and a knobbly head on both ends, but one side is more huge than the other.
Frankly, it looks like it could pummel someone to death.
I was going to say, summary...
You could literally beat someone to death with it.
My summary is, imagine if your dildo had been turned into a weapon.
Yes!
Then you've got an Enjoy 11.
Yeah.
So,
It's big and heavy.
It's really big and really heavy.
And really pretty.
And very pretty. And it is a little textured, but not very. It's mostly very smooth.
Yeah.
And so, like... apparently the thing that people watching were the most amused and impressed by was the fact that he got it in me with no lube and no warm-up.
I still maintain that there was a little bit of warm-up.
Like, what counts as warm-up?
He was rubbing the chain over you.
That
got you hot. I know. From your moans.
I mean, also, I did rub the Enjoy 11 around a little and twisted some before I shoved it in. And I think that's...
But eventually, like...
kind of like foreplay.
At the point where it was hog-tied, he was, like, having a little trouble getting it in. I was like, just push harder. He was like, okay. And he did. It was fine. And he was like, yep, all right. So just push harder. So that was the solution. I referred to it as my metal sex because it was all the chain. And
there was a lot of metal.
There was a lot of metal involved in that particular scene. And I had great bruises on my armpits, particularly from the chain hog tie. I guess we were talking just before this in the car about the fact that there's a lot of people who have a rope fetish. Like, they just get their eyes glaze over the moment rope touches their skin. And I fucking love being tied up, but I don't really have a rope fetish per se. I'm a really serious chain fetish. Like, basically just like rubbing chain over me gives me like the stupid look. So he's like rubbing chain all over me and like rubbing it along my labia, which makes me very
happy. That was so hot.
Even when I was just tying you up with the chain, like putting the thing around your legs, like every time the chain like accidentally dragged across your labia.
You had such a goofy face, but that was so hot though.
It was pretty good.
And then I was just like, you should choke me with this more. So it was like,
and then I did.
And then he did.
And then
everyone was happy.
Yeah,
there's some very loud orgasms.
There were. People were annoyed.
The people who were trying to do other scenes. Oh, well.
That happens.
So that was the good end to my night. But you had a rope scene that I didn't see because I was so tired after that I basically went back to the hotel after that.
Oh, okay. So you guys just like, okay, that makes sense because we didn't see you as we were leaving.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a really fucking hot scene with Gray in the tent.
Nice.
Which I will write more about, but the quick synopsis part and the part that's kind of a joke. So the synopsis part was it was a cigar place scene, and since it was steak and blowjob day, I ate steak for dinner, so you know I gave him a blowjob. But it ended up finishing with him fucking me over a table that had frozen roses all over it.
What?
Yes.
Under the tent outside.
This is under the tent outside because they had done like.
like, one of the presentations that didn't get done until later was, like, a dude was going to freeze roses and then beat people with them. So he had frozen a whole bunch of roses and just left them on the table. And
so hot or cold, yeah. But hot.
I know. But the thing, the thing is that I'm totally, and this is the joke of the blog that I need to write, I'm totally not romantic, but I have this feeling now that the next time I smell, like, flowers, fresh cut flowers, I'm gonna have this sense memory of being tied up in rope and cigar ash over my body and being fucked over a table that every time I'm gonna get flowers. This is not fresh cut, but thank you, Evan. Oh yes, for those who cannot see this, Evan, I just took a dried rose and tried to put it under my nose. But no, the whole thing that I'm gonna get, like, fresh cut flowers and my pussy's gonna automatically get wet. But people who know me know I am in no way romantic.
No, apparently you're going to get frozen flowers.
Oh, yes. Well, no, because I could still smell the fresh cut nature of them.
Oh, that smells so hot.
Yes, because it was after they had all done, like, the whole beating thing, so I think they had partially defrosted by this time.
Wow.
Yes, but it was awesome, like, so him, like, fucking me on a table with the roses and the rope on me. And funny enough, right, as, like, I came and then he came, somebody was just, like, had come up to the tent, and there was this little bit of a fear that it was somebody from, like, had randomly walked up while hearing people fuck. And no, it was a member of the actual crew, and they're like, yeah, they locked the door on me.
Yeah.
And he just come around the back, and I was like, oh, thank goodness, because I don't want random skeezy person, like, trying to peek into the tent, seeing me fuck. I mean, yeah, at the moment, I wouldn't have cared, but I think the organizers of the event would have had a problem with it.
That's amazing for your sex series.
Oh my god, it was. Like, seriously, I need to write. I'm going to write a blog about it. I promise you guys, I am going to write a blog about how hot this was. And actually, it was the first time that we had fucked in, like, a long time, so, you know.
Nice.
But yeah, it was so good. So, I feel like we should, like, talk a little bit about the fact that we identify as groupies and what that means. For those of you, because this is a fairly new term, unless, have you heard this before? Like, did you make this up?
I made this up.
Yeah, I thought you made this up. So, the three of us in this car identify as groupies, because we are going to, respectively, like, three or four grooves this year together, and it's kind of awesome. But then again, we kind of are just sort of kinky travelers, so, yes. We live close enough to each other that we can carpool, and it helps with the gas and helps to cut down the natural price of kink in our lives. So,
yeah. It's blue hotel rooms, all that good stuff.
Makes the ride less boring.
Yep.
Especially when we're having conversation about, you know, rape fantasies and planning gangbangs for future events.
Like you do. So, yes. So, I invented this term groupie. That would be GRUE-PIE. And I think, actually, Poetic, you win at being the groupie since you've actually fucked Gray.
Oh, gosh.
Which was the original joke that I made, actually, when I invented the term. I was like, actually, Poetic is the one who wins at being a groupie. The idea of groupies were people who, like, travel around and go to lots of grooves. And that, you know, we've done that. So, like, Evan and I went to the Toronto groove back in December. All three of us now have just been to the Carolina groove.
Yeah.
You guys are planning to go to the Rochester groove. All three of us are planning to go to the Pittsburgh groove. We're all going to be at Ramble
groove!
Where I'm going to be hosting 50 Shades of Grey, the musical.
I might be going to the Australian groove.
Oh, gosh. If I can find the money. If I can find the money somehow.
So I think it's important to try to explain, like, for each of us then, therefore, what it is that we get out of grooves that makes it worth the travel for us. So for me, the thing that I enjoy the most is the conversation. And, I mean, so I study kinky people. This is what I do. And I get to have a ton of conversations with people about, like, super intellectual conversations. The people who go to grooves tend to be much more introspective, in general.
which is hot.
My mediocre class yesterday notwithstanding. In general, like, people who go to grooves tend to be very introspective, which is hot. And it's also just really stimulating. And so I feel like I get a great opportunity when I go to grooves to help me think, both in terms of my academic work, to think. So, like, for example, one of the sessions that someone had yesterday was, what is BDSM? And I went to that planning to have a conversation and ended up sort of teaching it. But it's okay. I love teaching. And so, I mean, at this point, a big part of what I really enjoy about going to grooves is that I have the opportunity to teach whatever the fuck I want. And so I know a lot of, like,
people who present a lot often go to Grues to sort of test run classes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, for example, at the Toronto Grue, I test ran a class in polyfluid bonding, and I knew that was going to be a really tricky class to maneuver. But when you've paid to be there, no one can be mad at you when you don't teach a good class.
Right? Okay, good point.
You paid to be there, so, and they can leave whenever they want.
Because law of 2 feet,
it's
people.
Law of 2 feet is one of the fundamental principles of Grues. So if they don't like what's going on, they can walk away. And so it's a great way to be able to test run a class. And on top of that, you're not constrained by what organizers believe people want to see.
Exactly.
And so I really enjoy the classes that are sort of my mainstay classes that I teach at this point, which are like dirty talking, switching, blowjobs, and a class I teach called Fucking Meme. And those are the ones that pretty much everywhere I go, generally speaking, they're the ones they ask me to teach, which is cool. I love teaching them. But there's a lot of other things that I love to teach, too, that I don't get to do as much. And I think, and I've run all of those classes at this point, I think, at a Grue, and usually with really positive feedback. And so, in fact, if I don't get positive feedback from the Grue, then I would take it down off my list pretty much.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Although that is, like, it's, like, immediate feedback. And people, I find, are more honest at Grues.
Yes, they really are. And also, there's a real expectation that, like, people are going to contribute in a way. That one of the problems at most standard kink events, I feel like, is that people come to classes and then they're, like, hesitant to contribute to what's going on. Like, you're the expert, and they're there to learn from you. And I find it so much more productive to be in a scenario where, like I did yesterday in my rope bottoming class, be like, okay, I know a lot about rope bottoming. There are people who know a lot more about it than I do. I know a lot about rope bottoming. The thing that I can contribute here is that I'm really good at being able to analyze what's going on to my body in a way that I think maybe other people, even who are far better at being rope bottoms, are not able to articulate as well. But, you know, you bring an expertise, but that does not require you to be the expert.
Exactly.
And I think that is so much more educational for everybody when you show up and say, there is this thing that is part of this larger thing that I know a lot about, and I'm sure that somebody else knows more about the other thing, right? And together, we have so much more knowledge put together, and we're in a place where we can facilitate that together. Everybody learns so much more. On top of that, you're not stuck. Like, when you go to classes at most standard kink events, you kind of feel obliged to stick around even when they're really boring.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of times, like, they're just not that interesting, right? And there's, or it's like, there's 20 minutes of that class that I really want to go to. So, for example, a guy was doing a class yesterday in hog ties. And I know a lot about hog ties in general, but the thing that I didn't know was how to do a hair tie.
Oh, so, yeah.
And so I literally just walked out of another class that I was half participating in, watched the 10 minutes where he taught the hair tie, and went back to the other one. And it's really easy to do that at a Grue.
Yeah.
And it's fucking impossible to do that at a normal kink event.
Without people getting all kerfluffly at you.
Right.
Like, doesn't Gray have a story about an event somewhere where one of the presenters asked if they were, like, if there's any way that the event could, like, keep people from leaving?
Like
they wanted them to, like, lock the fucking doors.
Yes!
Which is ridiculous.
Exactly. It's like, dude, come on. Like, at least you know the people that are leaving are finding information that they want to get elsewhere. Do you really want them to stay in your class and have that negative energy? But apparently that person's ego wanted that.
But that's the beautiful thing of when you talk about that instant feedback of trial running the class. Like, if the people just start walking out, you know it's not going well. Like, the workshop that I was doing yesterday, that wasn't going well. Like, the people were just leaving, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, you have that instant feedback of, no, this is not going the way that I'd hoped it was going to go, versus, like, I mean, like I say, like, the polyfluid bonding class I think I taught at the Grue in Toronto was the biggest, like, Grue class that I've ever done. And while it was definitely, I would say, tense at a lot of points, because it's like a really hot, like, controversial thing, people were staying and staying and staying and staying. Like, I think it went through, like, basically two normal Grue length classes, essentially.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, it was a really long discussion, and that's part of how you can gauge things that people really care about. You have that instant feedback just based on the fact that people are there or they're not.
Yeah.
On top of the fact that people will give you quick instant feedback of, yeah, I learned so much about X, Y, and Z, in a way that just doesn't happen at most other kink events. So for me, a big part of what I enjoy is that ability to test run classes, and I really love teaching, so there's that. And then I also really enjoy the fact that I can just wander around and learn random shit and have really cool conversations with people, and I get all of this in the same day. And the other thing is that people don't stop. That's the best part about the group.
Yeah.
Is that once you get, like, into that mindset, like, it just doesn't stop. You go out to dinner, the group goes on. You go in the car, the group goes on. Like, it really just doesn't stop. And
yeah.
I really appreciate the way that that happens. So that's why I've turned into a groupie.
So, Evan, why are you a groupie? And actually, I think in the car, you're the person who's been to the most groups.
Actually, I think he's been to more groups than the two of us put together.
See, this was my seventh. How many have you been to, Cookie?
I think this was my third official group.
Wow, then yes, Evan, you've been to more than the two of us combined.
I'm in like 17 or 18 at this point.
Yeah.
I did the two different, the two times
European
I did the
groups?
Three European groups
yeah.
in a row, so it's
so
like six
jelly,
right there.
By the way. So jealous.
It turns out that is an awesome way to spend a month-long vacation in Europe, FYI. But I did those. I've done, Connecticut, I've done Pittsburgh, Ohio, somewhere in
DC,
Ohio.
DC, where you helped organize.
I helped organize two DC crews. We just did one in South Carolina.
Toronto.
I've been to Toronto twice.
Have you gone to any of the left coast ones?
I have not. That's been, okay. I would like to at some point, but never made it out that far. Oh, I did one in Chicago.
Oh, I didn't realize there was one in Chicago.
Yeah, there was one in Chicago a while back. Okay. That's where the blowtorch rape joke, the whole blowtorch rape scenario.
Oh, I didn't realize that's where it came from. I just kind of sort of thought that was just one random time where you and Ressa were in the same, area together.
Nope. That was Chicago.
Okay.
Those are the ones that come to mind. I don't know what that adds up to, but yeah, all of those. One of the reasons I like going to groups in general is just that it's very there's a level of like intensity and connection and analysis and variety. All of that sort of comes together in a confluence that you just don't get in a lot of other formats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a context where there's a lot of freedom to explore things. Everybody's like actually engaging in a passionate way as opposed to just in a sort of incidental, like we happen to be here, this sounded cool kind of thing. There's an intensity to it that you don't get in a lot of other ways, which I think shows in the like how wiped the fuck out people are afterwards. Yeah, I think that's where most of it comes from. And also, one of the reasons... So that's why I like grooves specifically. One of the reasons why I like traveling so many different grooves is that I enjoy sort of seeing the different sort of cultural nuances and different crowds and scenes that you get in different places, even in different countries and different... in a lot of the different regional stuff in the U.S., it's been really interesting. At some point, I really would like to catch some of the ones out on the West Coast, but, obviously, that's a much bigger sort of time and energy commitment.
Yeah.
I think another thing that I would add to that, too, is as an academic, you go to conferences because that's the information that's new and kind of cutting edge, and everything that's being published in a journal right now is always basically 2 years out of date. To me, I would say that grooves feel kind of like that relative to a normal kink convention, where it's like everything that's going on at the groove is what's happening now. This is the stuff that is like cutting edge that people haven't thought about yet, whereas the stuff that shows up at the standard kink conventions is the stuff that's 2 years old. And so, I really appreciate, first of all, being someone who can, kind of participate in that cutting edge to feel like that I am a contributor and sort of defining the cutting edge, I guess. But also to see what other people are doing and what they care about. Because I think one of the most compelling things that happens at a GRU is that people don't have to teach a class, right? You can put a class up on a board and say, someone teach me X, Y, or Z. So at the DC GRU... from a conversation that Gray Dancer and I had, he had said that he'd always thought it would be really interesting if bondage had been informed by Western, cowboy-style stuff instead of by shibari, if American bondage had been influenced by the cowboy tradition. And I was like, oh my god, yes, I've had all these fantasies about, lassoing a sub and, having, this, wrestling, violent-type thing as opposed to having a scene where the goal is to get someone suspended. And And he's like, you should totally teach a class on that at GRU. I was like, I don't fucking know shit about tying someone up. And he's like, you don't have to, it's a GRU. And I was like, all right, fine. So I put up a piece of paper for bondage for bottoms who want to fight back.
Mm.
And then I stood on the mat and I took off all my clothes and I was standing there naked. I said, so do any riggers want to strangle me?
And some of them did.
It turns out both Great Answer and Murphy Blue were like, yeah, sure, I'll strangle you. And so, I mean, I got to do an awesome class. I didn't do anything except exist. Basically, I was a very willing, a very happy victim as they were explaining how to rope wrestle someone. Okay. And so, like, I think that part of the beauty of people putting up those signs that say, teach me X, Y, or Z, that allows you to see what it is that people want to learn.
Yeah.
So at the point where you're submitting classes to other events, you go, okay, I went to this GRU, and there were like five people who really wanted to learn how to do whatever thing X is. And so knowing that allows you to then be able to put together a thing that in response to what it is that people really want to learn.
Yeah. I also think it's useful to think of them, like, you know, talking about GRU sessions as opposed to classes per se, just because there's so much variety in the format and like the execution of it. I mean, it can be like a discussion, it can be a someone else teach me something, it can be a like me monologuing on like a very specific whatever, it can be let's all do this one knot. I mean, there's just there's a whole lot of sort of flexibility there.
Well, why are you a groupie, Kristen?
Oh, why am I a groupie? Aside from the really awesome sex, gotta throw that joke out there. So for me, one of the biggest reasons why I'm so into kink is that I get to connect with so many different people in so many different ways. And I love the fact that when I go to a GRU, it's always going to be different. It's always going to be different people, different culture, different views. And I like going in and just like meeting the people and getting to know the people and then passing on the kink. Like almost every GRU I go to now, I teach bootblacking, and half the time I teach bootblacking and cigar play because those two are my bread and butter. Those two I can teach without my outline, even with like only half my shit there, because I like them so much. And what ends up happening is, and this has happened more than once, I will have taught a GRU class and then I'll come back for like the next year and the person will be like, oh my God, that thing that you taught me, I'm so doing that now and I'm doing it for my community and I'm trying to pass it on to you. And like, I get a high from that.
Yeah.
From people that are just like, yes, this shit that I learned from you, I'm able to pass it on now. So the being able to do that in a real concrete way, like that is the ultimate for me. I don't tell a lot of people this, although I'm about to tell everybody who listens to my podcast this, but I know that I've had a good GRU when during the closing circle, somebody mentions either me or something that I helped organize by name. So like if that happens in the closing circle, like I feel like I have done my part to make this GRU great. And so that did happen in this closing circle. And I was just like, yes, okay, I did my job right. I made people happy. I connected with them. I spread my kink. I have made the kinky world a better place. So yes, I'm the kink evangelist. I'm the kink missionary, if you will. And GRUs just like make it easier for that to happen.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Yeah, kink evangelism is totally a thing.
It totally is.
I'm just start wrapping up now. So I think that's actually a great way to end this discussion on GRUs.
All right, cool. Well, thank you both for talking to me about the Carolina GRU. One more time, Cookie, can you say the name of your website?
Yeah, so my blog is slutphd.com, and you can also check out a lot of my writing as well on FetLife. I'm IP Cookie Monster.
And Evan, you didn't have anything to plug?
Not really, nope.
Okay, just making sure. I'm going to remind people that we're actually going to be at multiple different GRUs coming up. Our next one is Pitt, right? Yeah, Pittsburgh GRU, and then
teaching in Pittsburgh the night before the GRU starts. I'll be teaching my fucking mean class to the Pittsburgh Bridge.
Yes, and then all three of us will be at GRU Pitt, and then two of us are going to be at the Rochester GRU following that, and then all of us are again going to be together at Ramble GRU! Yes, so if you guys can make it, that'd be super awesome. So thank you for listening to this low-tech version, though awesome interviewish style episode of Daddy's Good Girl. I am still searching for him, but in the meantime, I'm having awesome times with awesome friends. Have a good one, guys.